Hello and welcome to Connected episode 57 from your friends at Relay FM. My name is Stephen Hackett and I'm joined this week by Mr. Federico Vitici.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, buddy.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I just got back from Portland like 12 hours ago.
You've been traveling all around the United States.
It's true. It's like a world tour if the tour was just one city.
Was it a road trip or did you take an airplane?
Oh, no, I took a plane. Oregon is about as far as you can get and still stay in the United States. So
Really?
Yeah, it's for me at least, it's basically the opposite end of the continent, really.
Nice. Is it the same of the Oregon Trail, the game?
Basically, yeah. everyone has dysentery and died. Sad.
Wow, nice. Sounds like a good conference that you went.
Oh my gosh, I left Mike there. That's Mike's not here. Mike is still at Portland, and he took a couple vacation days with his lady friend after XOXO. And so he was alive in Portland last time I saw him.
Okay, that's good to know. Did he buy anything that you?
I know he bought Foo Fighter concert tickets, and
of course,
he got one of the new orange Apple Watch sport bands.
Why?
I kind of like it.
Yeah, is it a good color?
It's very bright, but it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. So. Nice.
Yes, we bought that. I don't know. Oh, he bought an iPhone, as did I. I guess we can talk about that.
Serious? You bought an iPhone?
He pre-ordered.
Oh, okay.
The pre-orders went up Saturday night or Friday night sometime.
Yeah. For you guys in Italy, we didn't get anything this time around.
Didn't get anything. You're like a couple weeks later.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy an iPhone from Germany or, you know, one of those crazy things that I did in the past. I'm just going to wait. You know, it's too much trouble to get one of these new shiny toys from another country into Italy. I just don't want to do it anymore. So I'll just wait. I guess we'll get the new iPhone in mid-October. That's my assumption.
Yeah, I pre-ordered a 6S Plus. So I'm staying in the Plus Club. Nice. 64 gray, nice. Like I have now. Mike ordered a white one, though, which I think is interesting.
Oh, really?
We talked about this on Upgrade, but I generally, the S cycle will order white phones just because it's a nice way to trick your brain into saying, hey, look, I bought something new, but I didn't this time. I stuck with the gray.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Space Gray this year. I'm kind of tired of the white one. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see. Depends. Maybe I should go, you know, rose gold and get a rose gold iPhone. I don't know.
It's quite, I've seen one. It is, it's pretty, it's quite pink, but it's good looking. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you saw one.
I did. Yeah. I've played with it a little bit. So it is pink. There's no way around it. And, I think it looks the worst as far as the antenna lines, because the antenna lines are like a light gray color. And for some reason it just really stands out there. Mm-hmm. Than on the other devices for some reason. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we should do a little follow-up.
Sure. And I see a listener name. Do you want to say this name?
I see what you did. So this email was not signed. And so I would say that what I put in the show notes, Federico, for you and I, is what his email address was. And I don't know if he wants us to share his name. So let's call him Andrew. Call him Andrew.
Andrew. Okay.
So we've talked several weeks ago now about, like, do we see Apple Watches in person? And I saw a lot at XOXO. Like, just everyone is wearing an Apple Watch. But out in my everyday life, I don't see many. And now it may be that where I live, you know, there's not a huge tech scene here. I also work at home, so my children aren't wearing them, so I don't see them on them. Mm-hmm. But this guy who we named Andrew says that he's seeing more and more of them, and it's mostly, he said, you know, from his sort of, just his notes, and he lives in Germany, I believe, that he does see them, he's seeing them more and more, but mostly on men, and mostly, you know, kind of late 20s, early 30s, you know, kind of where we are in life, and I think that makes sense. I think that kind of matches up with what I've seen. What about you? Have you seen more of them recently, or do you feel like it's still kind of slow?
Did I tell you that I saw my first Apple Watch a few weeks ago?
Okay.
Only one.
Just the one.
Yeah, I was eating out for dinner with my girlfriend, and I saw a guy walk by with a green Apple Watch sport band. That was it. Only Apple Watch I saw, except, you know, Apple employees inside the Apple store. So, yeah, just one.
Yeah, we had another email from Will, and Will is a student in college, and he opened his email with saying, "I am on the front lines of, quote, what the youth are using every day." So that works for me. He says he sees a lot of them, and I think, you know, with these two listeners are saying, you know, see them on younger people, see them on, you know, obviously it's an expensive thing, right? So kind of people mm-hmm. with some disposable income who are already nerdy, who don't mind having a computer on their wrist. And, you know, WWDC is where I'd seen the most of them until this weekend. But even XO, there's a lot of kind of creative technical people. So yeah, I don't see many of them just out and about. Like, I've never, like, been walking through a store, I don't think, and spot one. But yeah, they're definitely out there, just maybe not where you and I spend all of our time.
Yeah. And I guess I am asked a lot by friends, is the Apple Watch doing okay in Italy? And I think most new Apple products tend to take some time to become popular in Italy. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. Like, we tend to be more skeptical, and the fact that, you know, Apple products come out after a few months in Italy, it's also another issue to consider. And maybe I think the Samsung brand is quite strong here, and I do see more Samsung gear watches than Apple watches, for example. So I don't know what it is, but this has always been the case with the iPhone, with the iPad, and now with the Apple Watch. It always takes some time for a new Apple product to take off in Italy and become massively popular. But when it does, you can see it everywhere. So it's like, you know, one of those engines that takes a while to warm up and then it just goes.
Sure.
That's Italy with new Apple products.
That's a good analogy, Federico. I like that.
Thank you.
No, I mean, I think it's, I mean, in talking about this, I think back about owning the first iPhone. And I, you know, I worked at the store at the time and a bunch of us got them. And, you know, I had it probably within the first month, I think, is when they sort of finally were available to employees. And I definitely remember, like, pulling it out at a restaurant to show my friends and, like, people looking, like, people noticing and people, you know, even wanting to see it and wanting to talk about it. And I think that's just, like you said, that's kind of a normal thing for some of these devices. And like the original iPhone, the Apple Watch is expensive, and it's rare to a degree, right? For a while, unless you pre-ordered, you couldn't just go in and buy one. But my guess is that, I mean, Apple's clearly, you know, they've adjusted the line for the holidays. I think they're going to sell a bunch of them this quarter, and I think that, you know, starting after Christmas, we're going to see more of them sort of out and about on, you know, slightly more normal people than you and I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, we'll see. But anyway, so we have a couple of mini topics, and then we have a couple really big topics. If you've been paying attention last week, you probably know what the big two topics are. But before we do that, I want to tell you about Harry's. For many of us, shaving is a pain. It kind of stinks. It's uncomfortable. You get nicks, cuts, scrapes. You get razor burn, which is about the worst thing in the world. And it's super expensive. But enter Harry's. Harry's is started by two guys who, they just wanted a better product. So that's why Harry's exists. These two guys wanted a better product without paying an arm and a leg to get it. Harry's makes their own blades. They're high-quality, high-performing German blades. We know now, Federico, you and I know the Germans don't mess around. These blades
never.
Are crafted by shaving experts. And Harry's liked them so much, they purchased the factory. These razors offer a high-quality shave at about half the price of the other big brand blades. They ship for free to your front door. And the starter set is an amazing deal. $15 gets you a razor, shaving cream, or foaming shave gel. And I've switched to the gel and actually really like it. And three razor blades, $15. It shows up at your door. If you're like me, you don't want to go to the drugstore and have to buy this stuff that's way more expensive and you have to deal with a human. Order it online, it shows up. On average, an everyday shaver could save $150 a year using Harry's blades. And I do have to say, you know, I've they sent me a kit forever ago. I love the way the razor looks. It's super cool. Mine is like chrome with an H engraved in it. Just super nice. It feels good in the hand. It does not feel cheap. It feels like a real, actual product. And I really like that. I like things that, talking about the Apple Watch, I like things that look nice, I like things that have a weight to them, I like things that feel substantial. And the Harry's razor fits all those criteria for me. I tidy up my beard. I keep myself looking nice and smart, which is a very British adjective, but I'll borrow it today from Mike. And it's really the best way to experience a clean, close, and comfortable shave. If you go to harrys.com right now, they'll give you $5 off if you type in the coupon code CONNECTED with your first purchase. That's harrys.com and our coupon code CONNECTED at checkoff for $5 off and start shaving better today. All right, Federico, we have these many topics here. It's very exciting. I did want to talk a little bit about XOXO. There's a link in the show notes. It is a festival and a conference in Portland, Oregon, and it's sort of built around like what we do for a living, like independent people creating things in technology and in art and in journalism and in photography and all these things that kind of you and I do. This crossroad of technology and the liberal arts, even as you could say that,
yeah,
if you wanted to use that term,
yeah. But why not?
I kind of wanted to ask you, Federico. I had this moment this weekend, right, where I'm sitting here with all these people. Most, you know, a lot of them have jobs, but a lot of them work for themselves, and they're sort of in this industry that we're in. And I sort of had this moment, like for a long time, I looked at like independent creative people, and I looked at them saying, "That'd be really cool if I could do that one day." And I had that moment this weekend, sitting listening to someone's talk about, "It'd be really cool if I could make things for a living." And then I realized that I make things for a living. Like it's like, oh, I am now part of that world, like the independent creative technology scene. And I kind of want to talk to you about that. Like, do you ever feel that way? Like, do you think of yourself in that way of like you're an independent creative type person? Or do you just, for me, it's so easy to get lost in the weeds and what I'm doing. I don't ever think about it like in a big picture way.
Yeah. The strangest thing of writing and, you know, creating something that didn't exist before and then giving it to other people is you can be so absorbed in the idea of making it for yourself that you don't realize there's people out there who are consuming and enjoying, hopefully, what you create. So when I spend weeks or months working on something, I never do that with the idea that there's going to be X number of people, you know, reading this piece or using it in the future for something. It's a strange feeling. So I don't see myself as a creator, you know, when I write. I see that as my activity, as what I do, not necessarily as what I do for an audience. But then when I stop and think about it, like you did, I'm like, yeah, there is an audience. So I am creating stuff for people, not just for me. But I think if you get stuck too much on that thought during the creation process, it's, you gotta balance that, because you can be distracted by the fact that there's people and that there's an audience and that you gotta create something for others. Instead, I try to create for myself, and I try to create for my closest friends, like you, Mike, and the other Mac Stories guys. I try to imagine that there's a limited number of people who need to look over what I do. Because if I think about the audience, it doesn't matter whether it's 100 people or 1,000 people, but if I try to think about all these people around the world, you know, thanks to the internet, all these people in America and in Asia and in Japan and, you know, all these other countries and continents, it's super strange. And it kind of clouds my thoughts. So I try to not to get stuck on that idea. But when I think about it, when I stop and like tonight, when I will be done with this iOS 9 review, when I will stop and I will send it over to my team and I will save the draft on the website, I will realize this is going out to a lot of people. And what now? I don't know. It's strange. I guess it's different when you're like a rock star, or you're in a band, or you're in a movie star, and you're constantly exposed to big audiences and to the idea of living a life, creating stuff, right? Whether you create music or popular books, or whether you act in popular movies, you're always exposed to the idea of a big audience, of the public eye, you know, judging you. But mm-hmm. when you work at home, when you're an indie guy like us, you can get away from that perception. But when you realize that, it's super weird. So I think the problem is very much a peculiar one, especially because we work from home. We don't have a big office. We don't go walk on the red carpet, you know, usually. I don't know if Mike does. But yeah.
Yeah, it's just strange. And it just sort of hit me. Like the people I do work with now, like when I go to work with Mike and you and Jason Snell and, you know, all these people on Relay, and, you know, a fair amount of them sort of fit into this category, and a lot of them were at XOXO. So it was kind of nice to see a lot of Relay. And I was reminded, Federica, that you and I have never met in person. Also, never. That you and Mike have never met in person. So we need to change that. I think 2016 is going to be the year of connected in person. So,
mm-hmm. What if I don't exist?
Then it's been a really strange 3 years for me.
What if I'm a computer generated voice?
It's the sexiest AI I've ever heard. I think the listeners would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a couple other quick little things I wanted to share, something that I had put up on 512 last week, and we didn't get to talk about it. But I think you linked to it in your weekly email about the dog cow. So this is one of those things that in thinking that, hey, we work for ourselves and we can make things that we want to make, like this little project is definitely something that I only made for me. And if other people enjoy it, that's nice. But I wanted it to exist, so I made it. It's kind of fun.
It's the kind of information that, you know, you can only get from 512 and Stephen Hackett. It's, yeah. You know, as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, this is 100% Stephen. Yes.
Marco introduced me as the dog cow historian to somebody this weekend. So that
really
that nice.
That's very much perfect.
Yeah. And it's just one of those little, it's one of those little chapters in Apple and like Apple's history and story in which they had a lot of like personality breakthrough. And you don't see that all the time from Apple. You see it in places, but even like now when you see it, I always feel like it's kind of manufactured a little bit. Like, you know, like Craig Federighi being kind of like the king of dad jokes. Like, mm-hmm. that's just kind of something that they're doing to do it, you know? But this felt genuine because, like, a couple of engineers did it and it showed up and then it sort of got out of hand a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, the link's in the show notes. It's a fun little read. And I even, there's like QuickTime examples and I couldn't find good versions of them. So I've got them on YouTube now for the masses to enjoy. So it's a public service, really, more than anything.
That's what you do.
That's why I'm here. And of course, we need to ask about the iOS 9 review, because we're recording this Tuesday, September 15th. Oh, your review will be up tomorrow.
Yes.
How is that going?
Less than 24 hours to go, and the review is done. It's completed. I read the review 3 times. My main editor, TJ Luoma of the Make Stories team, read the review twice. So I'm still going through some final edits, but all the text is done. Half of the screenshots are done. The pagination is done. The links are all ready in the Markdown file. And I just need to look over like 20 other edits, which are mainly typos and commas, mm-hmm. today. So it's a 20 minute affair, and I gotta do about another, I would say, 150 screenshots, which I will combine with my scripts, and it will turn out to be maybe another 70 images for the review. I guess the total will be about 300 screenshots. I know there's 38 footnotes. I'm not gonna spoil the word count today. And so yeah, I will be done tonight. And I will send it over to Graham, the Microstories team. We, thanks to Brett Terpstra, we have a whole build script that generates ebook files from my Markdown file. We made a lot of customizations in there to make sure that the EPUB of the review looks okay and, you know, works well as an ebook. So yes, we're gonna offer an EPUB download to Club Mac Stories members, and yeah, it's done, Stephen. All the information is correct. I double checked with the GM. I double checked all the APIs that I mentioned. Hopefully, it's all. I haven't made any major mistake. And I'm exhausted. I'm excited. I don't know what to think anymore. I just hope the people will like it, because it's the kind of thing, you work on that for 3 months and then you reach the final stretch, you're done, you're just making the final, you know, modifications. I don't know what to think anymore. Does it suck? Is it good? Is it terrible? I don't know. Is it too much? Is it too little? Is it what people expect from me? I don't know. I just know that I put 3 months of my life into this. And if people don't like it, at least I think I will like it. I know this is what I wanted to write. My judgment right now is a bit strange because I'm exhausted. But I know there's nothing else I could possibly want to say. So all my brain, all my thoughts are in this review. And whatever happens, it's not up to me. So we'll see tomorrow.
Yeah, so I read a draft on Thursday of last week, and I'm not going to spoil any of it, but I will say that it is very good. And I think I told you this privately, but it's one of the best things, if not the best thing, that you have published. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about it is that even as someone, there's something in there for everyone, I think. So I have been using iOS 9 for a while now. And you explained some things that have been like driving me crazy because I couldn't quite understand what it was doing or what it was trying to do. And so you in that section, like, explained it, and I read it and I was like, oh, that's why this thing is this way. And so, I mean, even for someone who, like, I was supposed to be like super on top of it, was taught, I learned something from your review. So, and that was special for me, because sometimes I go into these things like, it's like I know like what this is going to cover, but there's stuff in there. I think there's something in there for everybody. You don't just focus on the iPad stuff, even though there's a really good section in there. Talk about iOS 9 on the whole. So even if you aren't super into the iPad, there's like, don't write this off. Like, go check it out, put it in an Instapaper, have someone do like schedule some time, read it,
take the day off,
change your name and flee into the woods to read it.
Move to an island.
Yeah. So it's good. And I'm looking forward to people's reactions, and yeah, I'm excited for people to see it, 'cause I enjoyed it. So thank you for letting me take a sneak peek on the airplane.
No, thank you for the support, really.
Yeah. It actually made, so on my way out to Portland, I got on the plane, and then we sat on the runway in Memphis for like an hour and a half, and that made that time go much faster because I read the review and most of it in that time. So it's kind of nice. I could feel the lady next to me, because like, we're just sitting there, right? And I'm not super great in that situation, like, talk to the stranger next to me, and so I'm just kind of reading it, and I could feel her like looking down at my iPad from time to time, and like, what is he reading? Because, I mean, this thing is like long, and there's like lots of technical terms in it, and so she didn't ask me, but I could kind of tell that she wanted to. But anyways.
And especially when she was looking at the name of APIs, there's one, there's a code snippet NS process info did change notification. It's the name of an API, I guess. Can you imagine like a normal person looking at that and like, is that even English? I'm just, you know, 24 hours. I don't know. Thank you. Just thank you, Steven. I will have to thank Mike also. He's been incredible. I've been texting snippets of the review to Mike since July. And every time he's been a gentleman, you know. Everyone else would have gone crazy. Just stop me. Don't send me any more previews of what you're writing. But you two are really great friends. And hopefully people will like it. We'll see tomorrow. We'll see.
Yeah. And we will, we'll, I'm sure, be talking about all of that stuff next week. But this week, we're going to talk about what happened last week.
Oh, God.
But before we do that, Federico,
yes,
we're going to talk about our friends at Lynda.com. That
sounds good. Okay.
Lynda.com is the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/connected. That's lynda.com/connected. Lynda.com is for problem solvers, for the curious, for people who want to make things happen. Maybe you want to master Excel, learn negotiation tactics, build a website, or boost your Photoshop skills. Lynda.com can help feed your curious mind. When browsing on Lynda.com, you can really find some amazing courses. There's things like Illustrator CC for web design. There's Bootstrap layouts, localization for developers, something I know that you paid attention to, Federico. You can go to Lynda.com and learn how to do that in your app. You can check out Xcode 6 courses. These guys are always up to date, and these things are done by professionals. You can learn about the Swift programming language, which is basically brand new. Lynda already has stuff about it because they use the best people in the field to get these courses put together. With a Lynda.com membership, you can watch and learn from top experts who are really passionate about teaching. You can stream thousands of video courses on demand, allowing you to learn at your own schedule and your own pace. You can jump around. You can put different things together and kind of build your own outline. These things are structured so you can watch them start to finish, or you can consume them in bite-sized pieces. You can browse each transcript to follow along, search for an answer, or skip to that point in the video. I know I can read much faster than I can watch a video, so I can really go through and kind of learn at my own speed. You can create and save playlists of courses you want to watch, customize your learning path, or share with friends, colleagues, and team members. You can even watch and download courses on your iOS device to learn on the go. Your Lynda.com membership will give you unlimited access to training on hundreds of topics, all for one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an industry expert, you're passionate about a hobby, or just want to learn something new, I want you to visit lynda.com/connected and sign up for your free 10-day trial. Thank you so much to Lynda for supporting this show and all of Relay FM. So, Federico, you're a pro.
Am I?
And you use an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want an iPad Pro?
Oh, so you just cut to the chase. Okay.
I did. Well, we can back up and talk about what it is and everything, but I think people want to know what you think of it. So what do you think of it?
I think I want an iPad Pro. I am concerned about two things. One of them is the size and weight of the iPad Pro and its portability. I don't always work at my desk or at the kitchen table, which is where I get most of my work done, actually. I walk around the house when I'm writing or reading. I work from the sofa. I work from the balcony. I move around a lot. And I always carry the iPad in two hands. And the iPad Air 2, it's so thin and light. It's very much a comfortable device for me. I'm afraid that the iPad Pro could be a problem in this sense because of its size. And also because of its, you know, bigger display and you know, increased dimensions, I'm afraid that it won't fit in my Tom Bean bag. So that's my primary concern, that it's too big for me. The other concern is, I think I may want to wait until the next version of iOS, because from what we saw last week, it doesn't seem like Apple is taking meaningful advantage of the bigger display of the iPad Pro to scale iOS 9 to this even bigger iPad, which is strange because with iOS 9, Apple is doing some things, you know, a lot of things actually, to make use of the iPad's display. But you tweeted that picture of the iPad Pro's home screen, and it really felt like a rushed adaptation of mm-hmm. you know, they could have done something different. So I'm wondering, maybe I should give Apple another year to perfect what they've done with iOS 9 to make use of the iPad Pros. But what if, and this is the turn of my concerns, what if it's not a problem for size? What if it's not a problem for carrying it around? What if it's not a problem the fact that iOS 9 could be a little better? Because that's what I'm excited about. Working with iPad multitasking, and I don't want to spoil the review. Of course, multitasking has been one of my favorite features of iOS 9. And it looks like on the iPad Pro, because of its size, because of the bigger display, using two apps at the same time feels less like using two mini apps at the same time, but more like using two almost full-sized apps simultaneously. So I definitely noticed when using iOS 9 on my Air 2 that the apps I was putting into split view were smaller versions, perfectly functional, but still smaller. And so sometimes it can feel claustrophobic, maybe. It can feel a little small. And I think that on the iPad Pro, basically when you activate split view in landscape, and if you choose the 50-50 layout, it's like using two portrait apps at the same time, which is pretty great of an experience, I think. So I think that the iPad Pro is what I want from a functional perspective. You know, the multitasking is bigger, the apps are bigger, I can see more and more comfortably, and I can probably do more also because the keyboard has a different layout, so that's welcome. My primary concern is that it's too big for me, and that's why I need to try one before making a decision, also because, you know, it's quite the expensive device, but everything about it sounds super great to me. And not just, you know, the bigger screen with better multitasking, but my iPad is my, I guess, my primary device for listening to music. So, you know, better audio, four speakers, that sounds really good to me. The increased memory for 4 gigabytes of RAM, that should lead to better performance across the system and, you know, third-party apps as well. Everything about the iPad Pro sounds exciting to me, and I feel like that's simply because I work from the iPad every day. And because of that, I am intrigued by a device, by an iPad that promises to do more. But at the same time, I'm also concerned about size and portability and whether it's more of an iPad meant to be used on a desk inside of an iPad meant to be held in your hands. The only way to know for sure is to try one. So we'll see what happens when I can finally try one.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I'm not particularly interested in it. I like the iPad Air 2. It's a good size for me, for someone who I mostly read and browse on it, and I like the bigger screen than the mini. I do think you raise good points, though, where yet again we're sort of in a situation where the hardware may be a little ahead of the software, mm-hmm. where this thing could do really cool things, but it may be limited by what the other iPads can do, right? Because it really doesn't do much besides the pencil stuff that the iPad mini and the iPad Air 2 can't do, right? Those iPads can do slide over, they can do the side-by-side apps, they can do all this other stuff. And for me, looking at this, like, I feel like there's an opportunity for Apple to kind of have this product stand on its own a little bit more, where maybe at some point it gains features that the others don't because of that screen size. And not just from a iOS perspective, like at the system level, but even with third-party apps. As far as I know, and maybe you can correct me if you know differently, but at this point, I don't believe there's any way to target just the iPad Pro with an App Store app. We're basically, you know, we've run into this problem over and over the last several years of a developer can just write an iPad app, and Apple expects and basically demands that it run on a whole suite of hardware. And, you know, there was a link floating around. We'll find it for the show notes about the guys who make Sketch. And basically they were saying, you know, we're afraid that there's not a market for it, that there's not going to be the opportunity for Sketch to make a living, make good money with the iPad Pro. And that's a shame for a bunch of reasons. But if the iPad Pro had its own class of apps in the App Store, and, you know, maybe there would be an opportunity to kind of reset this race to the bottom and say, hey, well, you know, the software is going to be more expensive because it can do all these other things you can only do on this iPad, right? But there's no exclusivity there. The iPad Pro, really, besides the Pencil, is just a bigger iPad. And while that's great in and of itself, I don't think it's enough to say this thing is really worth developers' time. It's really worth users' money to go after it.
Yeah, the developer question is, it's a tricky problem, and I don't think there's just one solution, because on the one hand, Apple could do more to enable different kinds of business models on the App Store, and when it comes to spending a lot of money, so $50 compared to free or $1 for an app, it's a lot of money. And when it comes to that, not having the ability to try an app or to, you know, offer upgrades for your most loyal customers unless you do some kind of workaround, that's a problem. And you could make the argument that iOS software wants to remove much of the complexity of the purchase process of Mac software. But there's only so many ways you can ask for money. You know, money is money. And convincing people is still the same problem, no matter whether it's on OS X or on iOS. When it comes to spending $50 or $100, you need to make sure that the customer is completely, or at least moderately sure about their decision. And the App Store lacks that kind of process. But on the other hand, there are some developers, and I'm trying not to do any kind of victim blaming here, but there are some developers, I think, that don't necessarily believe in iOS as a productivity platform or as a platform where they can make apps and they can charge good money for them. I'm thinking of examples such as the Omni Group or, you know, other companies that ask for good money when making productivity apps on the App Store. There's not many of them, but they exist. And they see the iPad as a platform where people can get work done because it's a computer. And there's many developers that just completely discard the idea of iOS as a platform where you can make that kind of app. Just on principle, maybe. I don't know why they do that. And it could easily be that it's a mix of preconception and fear of losing your money, which is a perfectly acceptable explanation. But I think in the middle of these two possible reasons lies the opportunity for Apple and for developers to reimagine the kind of app you can make for an iPad now that the iPad Pro is coming out. Apple needs to provide better tools for developers to charge money, not $1 or $2 on the App Store, but $50, $100, possibly every year. And the kind of money that isn't a subscription that can turn people off, but, you know, standalone, single purchase for professionals. And you could argue that the iOS App Store wanted to reimagine the way that you buy an app, and they have done that. But being a professional doesn't need reimagination. It just needs efficiency. It just needs security of your purchase process. And so there's just so many ways you can reimagine that. When it comes to money, it's money. But developers also need to seriously consider the market for people like me and many others. I'm not, you know, I'm not a special case. I'm not some kind of magic dude with an iPad. I'm just some guy like many other people, millions of people who use iPads as their primary computers. And they need to understand that there's a possibility that there's a market for that. And that maybe, just maybe, they can figure out ways to make money. Because it just comes down to making money. We're not talking about being, you know, a good Samaritan here. It's about a business. It's about making money from apps. And there's people who use iPads as computers. There is the possibility of making money. It is possible to, and I'm asking this as a question, but also as a hopeful statement. There's a possibility of making money on this platform, whether or not Apple makes changes. I would be very much surprised if next year, considering the iPad Pro and the kind of market it opens for developers, if Apple doesn't bring some changes to the App Store for developers. Because again, I'm all for the simplification of the App Store. And, you know, there's no confusion, there's no upgrades, there's no trials, there's no demos, it's just what it is. You buy or you don't buy. But also, you know, professionals, teams, businesses that rely on, you know, apps and iPads, they're not regular consumers. They're not regular customers, and they need exceptions. And only Apple can make those. So I'm somewhere in the middle on this issue. I think there's a point to those who argue that it's all Apple's fault. I also think there's a point to those who say developers could be more creative. I am somewhere in the middle. I don't know what the perfect solution is. I am just hopeful that with time and with this iPad Pro, it'll be a chance for everyone to say, okay, we need to do this now. Now is the time to make these changes, whether it's Apple or whether it's developers. So the next 6 months, the next 10 months will be interesting, I think. I hope.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's, you can look at the App Store and you could say, look, there's a lot that needs to change. And there's, you know, we spoke about it last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, about the idea of the App Store being split between like games and then everything else. And that, you know, how that could really change what the App Store is and how those charts work and maybe even how editorial works. And then you look at a device like the iPad Pro and it's like, well, you know, maybe it also deserves its own App Store, or maybe at least a section in the App Store that, you know, these really high end apps like Sketch, which is great on the Mac. I mean, it's a wonderful app and used by a lot of like truly creative professional people. And there's not, I mean, there are ways like, we can't justify doing this. We don't think we can make the money back. They also call out the trials being a thing. Like, people don't buy $50 apps without a trial. And we've talked about that for years on the Mac App Store as well. And you look at the Mac App Store and it, in some ways, the iPad Pro and the Mac sort of face similar issues in the App Store, right? There's not trials. There's limitations that, at least on the Mac, there's a way out, right? If you need something like Transmit, you can get it because you can sideload apps on the Mac, and you can't do that on the iPad Pro. And I don't think that's the answer. But I do think that there is an opportunity for Apple to look at this and sort of reinvent the App Store in a way of saying, look, you know, it's a different device, and using that this thing is powerful in a way that the other iPads are not, and doing something about that from a policy level, because all of this is just policy, right? Apple's hardware and Apple software move much faster than their rules and procedures and their policies and the way they treat developers and the way they pay developers. All that end of the business is very slow. And I think that the hardware and the software have a real opportunity to push Apple forward on this. And I hope they do. I hope this thing is successful. I think it'd be great to have a device like the iPad Pro that would really be Mac-like in ways that it just can't be today. Right, and the pencil gets it there, the keyboard gets it there, but if the software is not there, then it doesn't really matter. And I just worried about the iPad Pro withering on the vine because of that. And I don't know. Like I think it's a really interesting device. I think it could do well in a certain market, but I think it's going to be hamstrung by the App Store being what it is.
I think Apple should. I mean, we shouldn't read this kind of post from the Sketch developers. We should see Apple reaching out to the Sketch developers and saying, hey, your app is one of, I mean, it, on the Mac, Sketch won an Apple Design Award. So it's, you know, it's the kind of app that Apple celebrates. And there should be this kind of experience on an iPad Pro. There should be this kind of experience reimagined for iOS. See, you gotta reimagine the experience of using an app. You don't need to reimagine the business model. You don't often need to reimagine the business model, at least. Because, like I said, money is money. There's no reimagining there. And so Apple should reach out to these guys and say, why are you not making Sketch on the iPad Pro? What can we do to help you make Sketch for the iPad Pro? And this is not just about Sketch. It's about all the other hundreds of excellent apps on OS X that, for one reason, whether it's technical or economical, cannot be made for iOS and for the iPad. So let me read you this. Everyone wins. We sell more devices because we have the best apps. Developers reach a wider and wider audience and customer base, and users are continually delighted by the best and broadest selection of apps on any platform. That was Steve Jobs 5 years ago in Thoughts on Flash, and Steve had it exactly right. We sell devices because we have the best apps. You don't sell devices because you have the cheapest apps or the cheapest app store. You sell devices because you have the best experience. And there isn't just one type of experience. There isn't just the consumer, Angry Birds, Flappy Birds, many types of birds kind of experience. There's the professional, there's the creative, and Apple knows that because they made an iPad Pro for those people. They should also make the tools to enable a different experience for those people. It's very simple. It's, you know. But again, like I said, developers could also do, in some cases, a bit more of an effort. So I am somewhere in the middle, and there's no solution. We're literally talking about a problem that we can offer no solution for. But I guess that's the fun of podcasting. Yeah.
Yeah. We can just tell giant companies what to do. So we're going to talk about Club Mac Stories, your announcement this week. But first, we're going to talk about Blink, better affiliate links. Blink is an iOS app that works with your iTunes affiliate program. The iTunes affiliate program is really cool. You can sign up and you can earn 7% of sales generated by the links you create. Federico, you use these, I use these, everyone uses these. And Blink makes creating these links dead simple. Apple's tool is web-based and terrible and gross. Blink is awesome. It's mobile, runs on your iPhone and iPad. It's easy to use, it looks good, and it's just super great. You can create links to any media sold by Apple, including iOS and Mac apps, movies, TV shows, books, people apparently buy music. You can do that as well, all with this app. It handles storing your affiliate credentials so you don't have to remember them. You get this weird like little string of characters you have to add to the link. Blink does that for you automatically. You don't have to remember it. It's really flexible. You can search for media or you can link to it directly from Blink. It has a powerful extension to convert all kinds of iTunes links to affiliate links from within other apps like the App Store or iTunes Store, or with any third-party apps like Twitter clients. You can use it from anywhere it knows what it's doing. Once you've created a link, Blink lets you share it basically anywhere and take all that text or URL. Since its launch in March, I can't believe this thing's only been out since March, Blink has steadily added features, including support for Apple Music. But that's just the start here. In a couple of days, version 2.0 will be out, which will be iOS 9 only, and will ship alongside or shortly thereafter iOS 9. Blink 2 adds a lot of great stuff. iPad split-screen multitasking, so you can search for media and link to it as you work in other apps. You can have your text document and Blink up side by side. Keyboard shortcuts, multiple affiliate token management, which is something I requested, I think a lot of other people did too. You can assign nicknames to them, so you don't have to remember which code is which token. It's all just cleanly labeled so a human can use it. Link editing can be done inside the extension. So if you want to change the title of the link, you can do that. Pricing information for apps, music, and books, which you can't find in Apple stores after you've bought something because the icon changes. Blink can show you that now. And it's just super great, and it even supports Apple's podcast app with 2.0. So go grab Blink today so you're ready to go. If you want to find it in the App Store, be sure to search for, quote, Blink Better, because App Store search. or you can go to squibner.com/blink to find out more. Blink, make your links work for you. Thank you to Blink for supporting Connected and all.
Yeah, I love it. FM. And it's glorious.
It's a good app. Tonight. It's one that I use all the time.
Great sponsor and great developer.
Yeah, it is. Indeed. So we're going to talk a little bit about Club Mac stories. And so if people didn't see this, there's a couple links in the show notes. Basically, Club Mac Stories is a program now, Federica, that you've launched on your site for people to be able to support you directly. Yes. And in exchange, they get some additional content. So kind of what's the structure of this? How does it work? And what can people expect to get?
You can
get
subscribe
monthly. They join.
That's $5 a month, or annually. That's $50 each year. So it's like getting 2 months for free. And in return for your subscription, you get the Mac Stories weekly email delivered every Friday. This is the same email that we've been doing for the past year, but we created a brand new design, and more importantly, we are adding more and more sections. So we are kind of rebuilding the entire newsletter from scratch. We're keeping some of the old sections. We're adding some new ones, such as app debuts, which is showcases the best new apps from the App Store, or a Q&A section, so you can ask us questions and we will reply in Mac Stories Weekly. So really, we are expanding the existing Mac Stories Weekly, and we're calling it Mac Stories Weekly 2.0, which is very creative on our end, but that's really what it is. We're also going to do a new newsletter, which is the monthly log. This is an idea of mine. I've always wanted to do a kind of behind the scenes of Mac Stories, but not just about how we work, but also how we relate to what happens in the way in the things that we do. So it's a mix of a personal productivity journal with a reflection on Apple news for the past month. It's basically like I see each month as a unit in a year of Apple news and of Mac Stories coverage. And at the end of each month, we want to reflect on everything that's going on in our minds when the month is ending. And it's the kind of crazy thing that I don't think would be suitable for the main site. But I think for our biggest readers and fans, it's a nice idea to get a little more personal, a little more involved, and to see what exactly goes on in our brains. It's the kind of content that I've always wanted to write in some fashion or another. Then we're also going to offer free downloads starting tomorrow with the ebook version of my review. Club members will be able to download an EPUB file that they can read comfortably in iBooks and in other ebook readers. And we're also going to offer occasionally, on an occasional basis, we're going to do giveaways and coupon codes, discounts, that kind of stuff. So we're going to work with developers, whether they make apps or web services, subscriptions. We're going to offer coupon codes, discount codes, giveaways, licenses, whatever, to our club members. And that's it. That's the main perks of becoming a club member. So it's a way to get more out of Mac Stories every month. It's a way to support us directly, but it's not a donation. It's this is something that I tried to stress in yesterday's announcement. I've been asked for years from people to enable donations on the website because people are awesome and they want to support us. And that's great. I've always been humbled by those requests, but I never felt comfortable taking money for nothing more in return. Now, I know what we can give in return to those people because we want to, basically, we want to write more. We want to produce more content. And at the same time, the site is fine. There's some people reading too much into this announcement that we're doing subscriptions because of content blockers, that we're doing the memberships because the website is not doing well. The website is the same as last year. It's always going better, you know? Thankfully, we don't depend on banner ads or tracking users, those crazy scripts that other websites do. We are supported by sponsors and affiliate links, and we're okay. We just want to sell more content because we feel that it's the kind of content that we can ask money for. It feels like the right thing at the right time for us. And the initial results are much, much better than I was expecting. I'm super happy. And that's my pitch and my description, Steven.
Cool. Yeah, it's one of those things where a lot of people in our sort of arena are looking at things like this, where not as a way to shift away from, you know, advertising in the great coming of content blockers here tomorrow in iOS 9, but as a way to not only diversify their income, but a way to have better relationships with their readers. You know, one of my favorite things in doing these shows or doing 512 is hearing from people and having conversations with people, having conversations in real life at places like WWDC or XOXO, of talking about what we talk about here, but sort of with new people. And I think there's part of this too, where as a member, I feel like I'm supporting you, but I'm also sort of part of the Mac Stories family, that I am, you know, getting content that is exclusive to members, but content that is sort of crafted for that audience. And I think you've done it in a way where you don't feel like you suddenly have a board of directors, where if you mm-hmm. sell 1,000 memberships, you don't have 1,000 people that you have to answer to for everything. And I think that's a hang up for a lot of people, including for me, and thinking about this, like for Relay, like how do we structure something where I'm not doing a bunch of work for a pretty small group, and I'm not doing work that would otherwise, you know, be public, and how do I do it in a way where they're not in charge, right? Like, there's all these things, and it seems like you've thought about all those. Did you have any of those concerns going into
this? The biggest question for me was, if I'm gonna do this, this is the same thought that I've been having since basically 2012. If I'm gonna do this, am I gonna be able to provide subscribers with content they love? And can I do that on a regular basis so I don't skip weeks or people accuse me of stealing their money? Can I do this at a practical level without having the pressure of all these people hopefully subscribing? And that's why last year we were talking with the team about doing a newsletter. And I said, we're just going to do it for free. And we're going to do a test. We're gonna see if it works for us, if we can find the time, if we can find the tone, if we can find the content that we want to talk about. And we're going to see if it works for the readers, if they like the idea, if they, you know, if they stick around, if they enjoy receiving an issue of a newsletter each Friday. And we got to 5,000 people subscribing to Mac Stories Weekly last year, over the past 12 months. And I never announced Mac Stories Weekly on the website. It's been a 12-month soft launch, really. I've only shared Mac Stories Weekly on Twitter, word of mouth. I interviewed some people for the home screens, including you and Mike. So I never publicly advertised the free newsletter on the website. And so going into this, I knew we were going to be able to scale and to do Club Mac Stories because we've been doing this for 55 weeks. And I know that it's not a problem for my schedule. I know that we can find the content to talk about each week. And now with this different audience and with more resources that we can put into this, it's going to be even better. But it's not a problem of quantity at this point, because again, we've been doing this for a year. We know we can find the time, and we know the website can do just fine. And so it was too good of an opportunity for me to pass over this time. And in June, way before WWDC, actually, I think back in mid-May, my girlfriend and I were talking. She was like, "You gotta do the subscriptions by September, when you have all these articles coming out. You gotta have a system in place." And so way before not knowing that content blockers were going to be a thing, we set out to work on the club. And again, it's been quite an experiment so far. I'm very happy. We'll see how it goes tomorrow. We'll see how it continues to go, in the next few weeks. But I'm into this for the long game. You know, it's another thing that I do. It's Mac Stories and Club Mac Stories, and it's two sides of the same coin, basically. And I'm very happy.
You know, it's I like the way it's structured. I like the way that, especially the weekly email has been laid out and has worked over time. I get a bunch of email, and that's one that I always try to make sure to get to, because there's good stuff in there, and it's not. You know, so many websites do newsletters, do email, where it is basically just recycled stuff from the website. And what I like about Mac Stories Weekly is that there's stuff in there, these links or these home screen interviews, like they don't show up anywhere else. No. Like you're not doing a home screen interview with Mike on Tuesday on the website and then emailing it out on a Friday. It's just for the email. And I think that sort of care. And the amount of, I mean, clearly this is a lot of work. Like, I can't imagine how much time goes into these things. And it shows. And I was happy to sign up. I hope the listeners are happy to sign up, because it's, I feel like I'm not only being able to support my friend, but I'm also getting way more than that money's worth of content back out of it. And I think that balance is good. And I hope that it's successful for you guys. I mean, I hope that it can really change what you can do with Mac Stories and gives you guys the ability to do a lot more. Have you thought any about like, do you see Club Mac Stories changing over time? Do you have ideas? You don't have to share them, but do you have ideas of things you might be able to do if this thing is successful that you can't do now?
I want to add things to Club Mac Stories. And two of those that I also talked about on Twitter with some people yesterday are, I want to make sure that people can also read the issues of weekly and the monthly log on a website. So I want to build a web version of that. And I want to explore the idea of a community. So I'm thinking about forum, some kind, a place where club members can hang out, where it's a limited number of people, so we know it's not going to be a major problem in terms of moderation and time. I'm thinking about that, but I think I'm gonna prioritize the web access first. And also I'm thinking about making the ebook downloads more of a regular thing for, you know, our longer articles. I'm thinking about offering the EPUB version more often, not just when I do an iOS 9 review. But we gotta have a system in place to generate, you know, an ebook and make sure it's customized to each article's needs every time. So the EPUB we're gonna do tomorrow, it's customized to what I need in the review. But if we're gonna do this often, we need to have more of a general system that can, you know, make modifications to the file and, you know, allow us to change some parameters and some options every time, depending on the kind of article that we want to transform into an ebook. So we'll see. I'm gonna prioritize the web access. I want to do more ebooks. I want to do a community, but hopefully I have a lifetime for those features. So, you know, the next few months are gonna be exciting, because we can, you know, we have the basic system in place. Next, we're gonna work on additions to the club, and that's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's exciting. And I was talking with Jason Snell yesterday about it, and he sort of chuckled that Club Mac Stories is like the perfect name for it. I mean, obviously you have Club Nintendo, but it feels very European. I think if you create some sort of online forum or Slack or something for people to be in, I think you should call it the Disco. Yeah. Like, just really go all
my
in on that sort of idea.
My main inspiration, you can have that idea. Club Nintendo, of course. But also, like, I've always been intrigued or fascinated by the idea of, you know, like private clubs, not the club you go dancing to, but like private associations with members, you know, and you receive all these fancy letters with letterpress logos, you know, that kind of exclusivity aspect. And that's the kind of experience that I was trying to sell, you know, with you sign up and you receive exclusive content and you get this golden logo, and it's, you know, it tells you that this is just for you and for few other people. That's the idea. And then maybe it is a European thing, I don't know. But that's the kind of idea that I was going for. Like, with the old Club Nintendo, you logged into the website, there was a different logo, you could browse all Nintendo products that were just for you because they were based on the points that you accumulate in your account. It was very much like a very special thing just for you, and that was my main inspiration.
Yeah, I think that's great. So we have some links in the show notes where you can go join. You can read Federico's announcement post. I put the FAQs in there as well, which I have to chuckle. You have a sentence that says, "So yes, we are people," which I just read in your voice, because that's a sentence that you would say out loud.
Yes, a couple of people already told me that, so I'm happy that he, you know, he communicates that idea to other people.
Oh yeah. So you can find all the show notes and links we've discussed this week at our website, relay.fm/connected/57. You can learn more about Federico's work, and if it is September 16th or later when you listen to this, you can check out his iOS 9 review at macstories.net, or you can follow him on Twitter at VITICCI. You can find me at 512pixels.net and on Twitter at ISMH. And you can find our normal host, Mike, on Twitter at IMYKE. Or if you're in Portland this week, you might just find him walking around, because that's what he's doing. So I think that's it. I think I've done all the checkboxes we do at the end of the show, except thank our sponsors, Harry's, Linda, and Blink. And I'll see you next time, Federico.
Arrivederci.
Adios.